In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show, the carnivore diet, vaporizing essential oils, everything that you need to know about mobility, garlic for health, how to get rid of sunspots, and much more.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed. Mobility. Balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now. On the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Brock, today is a day that will go down in infamy.
Of course it will.
I think infamy is a word, at least. This is the first time in a very long time that I have developed a scratchy throat. I haven't been sick in like seven years.
Snap.
I woke up this morning. Well, it's 2 degrees, and I did a kettlebell workout in the garage yesterday morning. Mm-hmm. And in between my kettlebells, I was running up and down the driveway with my big traction-y boots on because it's all just snow and ice. And I think I may have overdone the cold.
So you think it's just an irritation? It's not like you actually caught a virus or a bug or something while you were doing it. You just irritated the heck out of your bronchial tubes.
That's what I'm going to say.
Bronchioli.
Because I'm going to keep telling myself my immune system is just unstoppable. I mean, knock on wood. I've got some weak parts about my body, but I literally, knock on wood again, just don't get sick ever. But I smeared a bunch of peppermint on my chest, so I smell like a giant piece of gum now. And I gargled with, of course, the wonderful Keon wild Mediterranean oil of oregano.
No, of course.
Which is I just kind of do that for anything, right? Like if I watch a bad movie, I take some oregano. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or if I'm annoyed at someone, I take some oregano.
And you rub it on them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're annoying. Yep, squirt.
If I have road rage, I squirt oregano out the window.
Well, don't you? You have it installed in your windshield wiper fluid, don't mm-hmm. you? You just sort of go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The entire world to me is a giant Italian pizza. Mm.
News flashes.
So, speaking of pizza, Brock, have you heard about the carnivorous diet? Is it called the carnivorous diet or the carnivore diet?
I think it's the carnivore diet, but carnivorous, sure. And they both mean the same thing. I can go either way.
Well, I'm a fan of meat, but I found a very, very interesting article. Let's start here. Inc. Magazine published an article, and I didn't know this about this carnivore diet, but apparently it was like last year, at the time we're recording this, in the fall of 2017. I'll link to this article.
Yeah.
If you're listening, just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/382.
Yep.
That's where all the show notes are, bengreenfieldfitness.com/382. Anyways, in the fall of 2017, apparently a bunch of members of the Bitcoin community, like the cryptocurrency community, switched to eating only meat and drinking only water. And that was like the underground movement that started this whole carnivorous diet craze that happens to be going on right now. And so it's a bunch of like Bitcoin enthusiasts, and now a whole bunch of blogs have popped up around it, and of course a Reddit forum, because there's a Reddit forum about everything. And it is essentially meat and water and nothing else. Just meat and water and nothing else. They call it a zero carb diet, or some people do, which is ludicrous because meat stores glycogen.
Totally.
So it's not a zero carb diet, FYI, just for anybody listening in. You actually do eat glycogen when you eat meat. Your muscles store carbohydrate, and so do the muscles of other animals, mm-hmm. last time I checked. But people swear that there's like this simple zen of eating only fatty, juicy steaks. Mm-hmm. And some other people will include like eggs and cheese, and of course heavy cream, because heavy cream is an animal.
Of course,
I love to hunt me some heavy cream with my bow and arrow.
Buggers, though.
They're those little heavy creams chasing them around the pastoral fields. And then with alcohol, apparently, and this is where I start to scratch my head. Apparently, a lot of people do drink on this diet. And so it's already starting to sound a little less dogmatic and less strict. Yeah, it's already falling apart. And so a lot of people are losing weight. And the article is quite interesting because there are some kind of cool personal anecdotes on the carnivorous diet, but it's not written by a scientist. It's written by some financial journalist.
No, and he's not pretending to be a scientist either. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
It's not like he's trying to pass this off as some great literary scientific thing that should be published in the Journal of Medicine or something. He's just telling his story.
Yeah. And there was another guy, my friend Ryan Muncy, wrote an article where he followed it for 30 days. His website's at ryanmuncy.com, and he kind of delves into how a lot of people do this because of all the lectin and the gluten and the other plant compounds that can cause digestive issues like Crohn's or leaky gut. And a lot of people are just getting rid of bloat by switching to only meat, which again, I think is ludicrous because all it means is that you're too dumb to figure out how to cook plants the right way.
Yeah.
If quinoa gives you diarrhea or you find pieces of quinoa in your crap, it might not mean quinoa's bad. It might mean maybe you just grabbed it off the shelf and cooked it and didn't take time to soak it.
Yeah, well, and there is that whole thing of like your body does adjust and develops the enzymes and the things it needs to actually digest the things that you give it on a regular basis. So, like, there's that as well.
He even has a quote from Harvard psychiatrist John Rady, who wrote this book called Go Wild, and that book says our primary method to overcome our inability to digest plants is to outsource its job. Meaning you let the animals eat the plants and then you consume the plants. And it is true, like, you know, liver, for example, is really nutrient dense. And a lot of meat is really nutrient dense. And some people would even argue that you don't need as much fiber as we may have been led to believe that one would need. But I also don't believe that meat is like this unhealthy, artery clogging, fattening, cholesterol raising, heart attack inducing, constipating, tumor producing food that should be avoided like the plague.
Yeesh.
I don't believe that. I know. I'm preaching it.
All right.
But I also don't think like a plant-based diet is the holy grail of health. I'm mm-mm. all about being omnivorous. And as I tweeted last week, I like to have a glass of red wine and some Brussels sprouts and some sweet potato fries with my ribeye steak. Mm. Thank you very much. Because I like to live life to the fullest.
Yep.
And to me, it's a little more fulfilling to have other things scattered. But when you scattered... I mean by that, like, you know, amongst your meat, not on the floor underneath the table. But, you know, you have a whole bunch of meat mongers historically, right? Like the Inuit, they did fish and seal and walrus and whale meat.
Yeah, but
and
not because they wanted to.
The Maasai, they did milk and meat. Yeah, because they couldn't grow plants, right? I think there was an Indian tribe. I mean, a Native American tribe. Sorry for not being PC. How do you pronounce that?
I forget. Sioux.
The Sioux tribe? Yeah, the Sioux tribe. Yeah, the Sioux tribe. The South Dakota folks. They ate mostly buffalo meat. There were some Brazilian tribes who ate mostly just beef and meat. And I get it. And you could certainly survive on a long adventure for a long period of time on whatever, pork rinds and beef jerky. But for me, it's about dietary diversity. It's about, honestly, the long-term health of the microbiome. It's kind of like you feel really good on a vegan diet for a little while, and then eventually you'll build up fatty acid deficiencies and amino acid deficiencies. And I think you could say the same thing for a carnivorous diet, right? You could eventually get to the point where you're developing some microbiome issues, some bacterial deficiencies, some potential like flavanol or polyphenol deficiencies from just not having... enough plants in your diet. That's my take. I don't know. What do you think, dude?
I don't know. I always just look in my mouth and think like we were given this vast array.
You look in your mouth.
I look in my mouth for answers all the time. That's that's where I keep my answers. But my teeth, like our teeth as humans, we've got teeth to crush plants. We've got teeth to rip meat. We've got teeth to crunch through hard stuff. Like we've got all the teeth. So we should use them.
Yeah,
that may be totally reductionist of me and not very scientific, but it just seems obvious.
No, that's a dental approach. Yeah. And then there's also the approach of like when you look at if you're just doing this for like longevity, you know, I get the gut health issue. And again, what I'm saying with the gut health issue is maybe just prepare your plants better and avoid some of the more fermentable foods like garlic and onions and try that first before saying bye-bye to everything green. But when you look at studies in longevity between meat eaters and plant eaters, they kind of go back and forth. There's very little correlation between longevity and a vegetarian diet or longevity and a meat eating diet. And that's because they just lump everybody together. And I really think that I was reading a study just last week on the presence of a gut bacteria called Prevotella. And that gut bacteria's propensity to allow you to thrive or not thrive on a higher fiber, more plant-based diet, right? And some people have higher levels of that and some won't. And so some people may confer a greater amount of longevity from more plants. And some people may have issues with excess methionine from meat. I mean, it all comes down to customization, yeah, in my opinion. Whenever I see dogmatic diets like this, that's why I like... Did you listen to that interview I did with Dr. Ben Lynch, the guy who runs the Stratagene?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Service?
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Like, you get tested, you could see what dirty genes that you have that might make you less able to process, like, high amounts of folate, or you might see a need for more glutathione, or, you know, things like that. So, ultimately, I'm a fan of dietary customization. I'm also a fan of plants. Personally, speaking of plants, got another one for you.
The tiny little trees,
broccoli. Yes, broccoli. The one, you know, when tiny, you pretend trees. To be. I pretended to be a dinosaur when I was a kid. That's how my mom got me to eat vegetables. I was a dinosaur. It's like one step up from the baby food being on an airplane on the tiny spoon. Except now I'm a dinosaur.
It's like the ages 10 to 15.
Yeah. Everybody who does not have kids right now is just going. Mm-hmm. Anyways, though, broccoli. So there's this compound in broccoli called sulforaphane, and we know that that's in broccoli, and we know it's a very beneficial compound, especially when it comes to its anti-inflammatory effect and its healthy effect on the gut. But vegetables also contain enzymes that they've evolved for defending themselves against speak of the devil, herbivores, right? People who eat plants. That enzyme is myrosinase. And that myrosinase activity is how the sulforaphane gets made. I'm going to throw in another word here. Vegetables have these things called glucosinolates. I read a lot, but I don't know how to pronounce things.
Yeah.
That's the way I roll. Anyway, so you need to transform these glucosinolates into sulforaphane, and the way that you do that is via this enzyme, myrosinase. And to kick that enzyme into gear, you actually have to damage the plant, right? It's the same reason that, like, ripping up kale before you rip up kale concentrates the antioxidants in the kale. There's a really good book called Eating on the Wild Side by Joe Robinson, I think her name is, where we get into this. And basically, the deal with broccoli in this research study that they did was they pulverized it, like chopping it into a bunch of pieces, and they took some that they just left regular and raw and some that they stir-fried. And it turns out that the best way to concentrate all the beneficial compounds, all the sulforaphane, is you just cut it or you pulverize it into tiny little pieces about 90 minutes before you cook it. And that, my friends, is how to biohack your broccoli. And actually, when they cooked it, it had less sulforaphane.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you rip it up. Yeah, you rip it up or you chop it up and then you wait like 90 minutes and then you cook it. So...
I didn't get the whole waiting a 90 minutes thing. Like, it makes sense to chop it up because you're increasing the surface area.
No, it's because the enzyme has to get activated by the chopping and go to work.
Yeah, but wouldn't that happen immediately? That's the thing.
No, enzymes do take time to work. It's like if you open up a digestive enzyme that you take to digest a meal better, and you sprinkle that on a steak, you can watch it digest the steak, but it's an enzyme.
Yeah, but you're introducing that exogenously to your steak. It's not something that's inside the steak already. Like, you're not chopping the steak up and letting it eat itself.
I get what you're saying, Brock, but what I'm saying is enzymes take time. Enzymes take time. If you do any enzymatic process in a chemistry lab, it's not instant, right? Okay. Usually it takes a little time to do its thing. So
whatever.
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. That's okay. It's all right. I get it. Vegetarianism. Vegetarianism, which we're obviously talking a lot about. Here's another one. Is vegetarianism healthy for children? Is vegetarianism healthy for children? Turns out we can turn to science for the answer to that question. This should be controversial. It's a new paper that criticizes the official stance of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics and also the United States Department of Agriculture. And what this paper goes into is the current evidence on vegetarianism and a plant-based diet and its effect on fetuses and its effect on children. And I will link to this again. Just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/382. But essentially, there are serious risks for the brain and the body development that they found in fetuses and in children. And they also found that regular supplementation with the things that people normally take to make a plant-based diet complete, like iron and zinc and B12, did not mitigate these risks. And honestly, the final sentence of the abstract kind of sums it up. They say, consequently, we cannot say decisively that vegetarianism or veganism is safe for children. So there you have it. Kids need some breast milk with their broccoli. Mm. Their chopped up pulverized broccoli. So there you have it. The carnivorous diet, how to make your broccoli biohacked, and how vegetarianism is probably not all that great for a fetus or a child or a baby.
A fetus eye.
Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use a special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just 3 times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office. My cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard, because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full-spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just 2 bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Listener Q&A.
Hi, my main issue is, no matter how hard I try, I cannot seem to get flexible. I've been doing squats, and I've been doing extra stretching, and I've been doing martial arts, and I've been trying different things now for, you know, well over 3 years. And no matter what, it just seems like, I cannot get any kind of flexibility. I got no kind of rotation. I can barely squat. However, I can run, play sports, I play basketball, and I did tons of push-ups. Burpees, no problem. Just anything with flexibility, you know. I just can't seem to get over the hump, and I don't know what to do. So, if you have any answers as far as how to really get to the next level of flexibility, and really from, you know, I can't touch my toes to, you know, I can't break, you know, parallel squats. I'm trying to think what else I got. No, I'm trying to do like overhead presses. I can barely get my arms up straight over my head. And basically anything that has to do with any kind of flexibility, turning my body left or right, anything turning sideways is definitely an issue. So if you could help me out, that'd be great. And my name is Anthony from Philadelphia. Thank you.
So Anthony, he can't reach overhead, can't touch his toes.
No.
Can't rotate his torso.
No.
It's basically like
that called ankylosing spondylitis? Isn't
concrete like vegetable with ankylosing spondylitis. Exactly.
Anthony, look that up and you'll be terrified. It's
yeah. Sorry, well, Anthony.
Hopefully you don't have that.
You're screwed. Pretty soon you're going to basically just be like a walking splint. Yeah, flexibility. It's, you know, a lot of people are born with lower levels of mobility due to higher levels of tendon stiffness, which honestly, my wife has that and she's a very fast sprinter. She has extremely tight hamstrings and those serve her quite well.
She's like a freaking spring.
She also gets IT band friction syndrome if she tries to run long distances also because of those tight thighs, right? So it's a catch-22. Sometimes being inflexible means that you're more springy, you're more explosive. Your tendon simply can store more potential energy. And at the same time, there are other people who have low flexibility because they are stiff, and that's because of these cross-linking of fibers. Other people, because they're very stressed out, right? Stress, cortisol, tension, locking the jaw, grinding the teeth. A lot of times that results in tightness or is correlated with or accompanied by tightness throughout the body. And I don't even like the word flexibility because I don't care about flexibility that much. I don't care if you can touch your toes. What I care about is mobility, mobility, the ability to be able to actually move through a specific range of motion versus just being able to stretch a muscle X amounts of inches. So, you know, don't worry about flexibility. Worry about actual mobility to be able to perform the activities that you want to perform. Now, that being said, there are a lot of ways that you can actually improve mobility. But before I get into those, again, not to kick this horse to death, but stretching and flexibility and being Gumby is not mobility. There's a host of data that shows that static stretching does not reduce the risk of injury, which is one of the primary reasons that, you know, you may have been led to believe you should do static stretching before exercise. Multiple research studies have shown that it can inhibit the amount of force that a muscle can produce, especially when it comes to like jumping or sprinting or lifting. They found that runners, this was a study a few years ago, they were 13 seconds slower for a 1 mile uphill run, which is a lot for
That's
a mile.
Significant.
When they stretched before running up the hill. So, again, like mobility is what you want to go after, not flexibility, especially if you are an athlete or somebody who's trying to perform, you know, good, hard, solid workouts. And don't get me wrong, yoga is great. It decreases blood pressure. It teaches proper breath work patterns. If you're doing like Bikram yoga or sauna yoga, it can have a detoxification effect and you produce heat shock protein and nitric oxide, but it is not serving you well if you are an explosive athlete. So,
but the outfits, I mean, the yoga outfits are to die for.
They are.
Come on. That's the only reason to do it in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The flowy shirts and the pants.
I look fantastic in my pants.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Tight pants.
Yep. Got tight pants on. The thing with yoga and with stretching is that I do it, but I don't hold the stretches for a very, very long period of time because I don't want to become excessively stretched. A Golgi tendon organ, which is that organ near the center of the muscle that causes that reflexive contraction to protect the muscle when it's stretched, it takes holding a stretch for about 6 seconds to cause that Golgi tendon organ to begin to relax a little bit and for you to get a little bit more flexible. Yeah. And so and I'll
hold for those of you out there, the Golgi reflex is the thing that protects you from like basically just ripping yourself into, like it stops you from stretching beyond your actual capability or your fiber's capability.
Exactly what the chimps in the Planet of the Apes do not have. They can just like rip steel bars to pieces and pull cars apart, right? Actually, it is true. Chimps have far, far less sensitive Golgi tendon organs.
Really?
That's one of the reasons they're so strong. You know, that's why like a baby chimp can like rip a human apart.
Huh.
Yeah.
But then they pay the price for it afterwards, I guess.
Yeah, if you learn nothing else during this podcast, it's not to mess with a baby chimp because of its little Golgi tendon organs.
Done.
So I don't hold a stretch extremely long. I'll hold a stretch for at least 6 seconds so I can get a little bit of improved flexibility, but I don't hold a stretch for like 30 seconds, 60 seconds, 2 minutes, unless I have a very, very, like my hips tend to get tight, and the hips are one area that I'll stretch a little bit more than some of the other groups. But when it comes to mobility, of course, just basic dynamic stretching rather than static stretching is extremely effective. And there's lots of studies that show that can increase power and strength and performance during any subsequent activities. It's also called ballistic stretching. This would just be like swings and, like arm circles, leg swings, walking lunges, bent torso twists, what we would call like an active warm-up, a dynamic warm-up. And
ballistic makes it sound way more violent than it actually is. It's
right.
It's not that violent. It's just
there's swinging. A host of great examples, like that recent kettlebell certification that I did down in San Francisco. We would start off each day with about 10 minutes of, you know, you'd lunge for one leg and then drive that hip out to the side. Then you'd lunge for the other leg. Then you drop in a down dog, but it was just like into down dog for a second, then forward, then back into down dog for a second, then forward. And then you'd stand and reach for the sky, but then drop down into a squat and reach for the sky from the squat. And, you know, a whole host of different stretching kind of routines. I even have on YouTube, if you go to the Ben Greenfield Fitness YouTube channel, or just go to YouTube and do a search for Ben Greenfield Mobility. I have two different videos that show like how I'll combine dynamic stretching and foam rolling where, you know, I'll foam roll the hips, stand up, do a bunch of hip swings and hip circles, get back down, foam roll the shoulders, stand up, do a bunch of hip swings or shoulder swings and shoulder circles. You know, I'll even do like, you know, golf balls on the bottom of the feet, stand up, do some down dogs. So I like to combine deep tissue work with dynamic stretching for a really, really big improvement in mobility. And that's kind of like the second part in addition to dynamic stretching to increase your mobility. I would be deep tissue work. And that would be any type of stimulation that works deep into your muscles and connective tissue. So that could be like active release therapy or Rolfing, or, you know, I've interviewed people on like muscle activation technique, another one called advanced muscle integrative therapy. Graston, trigger point therapy, deep tissue sports massage, you know, the whole tennis ball, lacrosse ball, golf ball, foam rolling approach, all of that can remove a lot of the adhesions, and the adhesions are what can cause a muscle to be protective, result in friction and pressure and tension, and then eventual inflammation and edema and decreased circulation, and then more adhesions. That's like a cumulative injury cycle. I talk about this in my book, Beyond Training. And in that book, I get into a whole bunch of different ways that you can kind of like incorporate your own deep tissue work. I also have an article I'm going to link to in the show notes that goes into not just a lot of really good ways to look into better deep tissue work. Like, you know, what is advanced muscle integrative technique, right? Like that's based around the fact that every tissue in your body is saturated with these proprioceptors, and those monitor and control every part of a body's function. And when you're injured or you have a high amount of inflammation, they become protective and they shut off the function or they shut off the mobility in that area. And you can actually apply very, very deep pressure using this thing called advanced muscle integrative technique and almost like turn off those areas that are being hyperprotective. I had a podcast called Dr. Two Fingers Reveals His Teeth Gritting Body Healing Secrets, where we went into that. I've got podcasts on muscle activation technique, Grasson technique, trigger point therapy, deep tissue sports massage. I'll link to an article in the show notes where I kind of really delve into the details on a lot of those. And I also get into really cool forms of dynamic stretching. One that I use quite a bit is called resistance stretching. There's a book by Bob Cooley called Resistance Stretching. It's about resistance stretching. Imagine that. And you're actually resisting. You'll do like a shoulder stretch where you'll pull your shoulder across your body, but you're resisting with the other arm. And by resisting with the other arm, you're actually firing the muscle that is on the opposite side of the muscle that you're trying to stretch. And when you do that, the muscle that you're trying to stretch becomes more flexible. It's just based on this concept that when you, for example, heavily contract your quadricep and then stretch your hamstring can move through a greater range of motion. And you can also do the same thing from the opposite spectrum. You can, and this is called proprioceptive neuromuscular facilitation. You contract the hamstring really, really intensely and then stretch it and it moves through a greater range of motion. So I've got a lot of strategies like that that I'm going to link for you, Anthony. And then there's also a few other things. I mean, you have your joints, and you can change the integrity of the fascia and the muscle and the connective tissue with deep tissue work, but you're not doing anything for the actual bony capsular area of the joint itself, like that, like the shoulder joint or the hip joint or the knee joint, you know, or the spaces in between the knees or the ankles. So that's where traction comes in, and that's why I have, for example, like giant bands scattered around the house where, you know, I've got a band upstairs in the living room right now, and I'll wrap that band around my hip and move forward into a lunge and just kind of lunge in and out and through a bunch of different ranges of motion. And that's actual traction, hanging from an inversion table. That's traction.
That's what that's for. I thought that was for sexy times.
You mean the elastic band in my house?
Yeah.
Just
made an assumption there.
No, I'm not using that to hold anyone down or to slap anyone or spank anyone. It's
autoerotic asphyxiation.
No autoerotic asphyxiation. Google that, kids.
Or don't.
Just basically you attach the elastic band to the joint that you want to put traction on. Then you move away so far that you can feel tension on the hip or the knee or the shoulder. And it works like gangbusters. You know, Kelly Starrett really kicks that horse to death in his book, Becoming a Supple Leopard, which has a lot of detailed instructions on self-traction exercises. Or you could get like an inversion table or a yoga swing or gravity boots. Like I use a lot of that stuff, and it really, really helps increase the seeping of synovial fluid into joints when you're tractioning like that. So that's another one. And then finally, I mean, you cannot discount the food and the supplements piece, right? Like collagen. Collagen is fantastic for joint health. And it might not make you more flexible, but it definitely goes hand in hand with any type of mobility program. I'm right now consuming, based on a little challenge from my friend Mark Sisson, who is lauding the benefits of collagen lately. I'm doing a lot of collagen, about 40 grams of collagen a day. He told me to just try it, so I am.
And, all in one go or spread out over
No, I spread it out throughout the day. Yeah, okay. Spread it out throughout the day. You can only absorb about 20 to 30 grams at a time anyways. Yeah. So that and amino acids, which acts very, very similarly, like in a good essential amino acids blend, like our Keon aminos. In addition to drowning myself in Keon oregano, I'm also going through like almost an entire canister of our Keon aminos powder every week. Like I'm just using
damn
it. Well, yeah, crap. Dude, I mean, it's extremely anabolic with zero calories. I mean, it's one of the best ways to keep your muscles put together. And I mean, that's the difference between that and collagen is essentially that it does almost the same thing, but with no calories. And granted, I'll have collagen because my body needs calories. But if it's in the afternoon or if I'm fasting and I still want to continue to put my body into repair mode, I do amino acids. I've been doing a lot of amino acids.
Yeah, like it's an expensive habit.
Yeah, I'm pretty well. I mean, like it's Keon is my company, so I get a good deal on the products.
That's true.
But yeah, amino acids are amazing. I mean, not branched chain amino acids. There's a lot of issues with those, especially the high amounts of leucine in those. It screws you. But the a good essential amino acids blend and or a good collagen, amazing. Ginger is another very good one. Ginger has a really good anti-inflammatory effect. I feel like a broken record here. That's actually a key component of our Keon Flex product. Mm. That's like a shotgun for your joints. Not like shooting a shotgun at your knee, but like it's like that joke about the old lady who decided that she was going to try to commit suicide by shooting herself in the heart, but she wasn't quite sure where the heart was. So she looked it up and it said, you know, the WebMD said, you know, the heart is located just below the left breast area. And so a few hours later, she wound up in the ER with a gunshot wound to her left knee. anyways, this old woman.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a sagging breast joke.
Don't Google that, kids.
Yeah. anyway, so antioxidants, speaking of plants and possibly another hole in the carnivorous diet is that vitamin B and vitamin C increases cell wall elasticity and joint mobility, and a lot of other inflammation-reducing polyphenols and bioactive compounds that we find in plants do a similar thing. Blueberries, raspberries, you know, blackberries, and pomegranates, and currants, and it, like a colorful vegetables like purple cabbage and dark red tomatoes, or like, you know, the carrots that are all sorts of different colors, or sweet potatoes and yams and colorful, you know, purple taro. All of those fantastic for like a joint mobility and a flexibility and a recovery program. And then if there were any supplements. Are you familiar with proteolytic enzymes, Brock?
I sure am. I used to use those like crazy when I was doing Ironman.
Yeah. I mean, that's like I was talking about enzymes. I could sprinkle them on a steak, and you can buy proteolytic enzymes, sprinkle them on a steak, and literally watch before your eyes that steak digest, that you can also use as a tenderizer for meat. But you look on the label of a supplement that has proteolytic enzymes, and you want to look for things like trypsin, chymotrypsin, papain, bromelain is another, and those actually roam through your bloodstream, and they break down fibrin surfaces and scar tissue and granulomas and tough cell coatings, all of which can cause joint pain and lack of mobility. So, excuse me, I need to go grab some oregano. Yes. When I'm injured now, I'll do 12 of those Keon flexes, 6 in the morning and 6 in the evening, because they're just chock full of proteolytic enzymes. So I do a lot of those, and then glucosamine chondroitin as well can block the action of enzymes that break down cartilage tissue. So that goes really, really well with amino acids or with collagen. And then glucosamine helps to stimulate cartilage production while the chondroitin attracts water to the tissue. So it helps the cartilage to stay more elastic. So anybody who's trying to increase their flexibility or their mobility should definitely include glucosamine, chondroitin, proteolytic enzymes, ginger, some kind of bone broth / collagen / amino acid. And probably the last one would be like omega-3 fatty acids. Speaking of a challenge, that 40 grams of collagen per day challenge, Keith Norris, the guy who runs that Paleo FX, he was telling me he tried to do 40 grams of fish oil per day. Mm-hmm. Which I would think would just give you like, you
know, the leakiest blood ever.
Fishy, oily, leaky diarrhea that smells like Pike's Market in Seattle. But in fact, he said like his vision improved. His joints felt amazing. After I talked to him, I actually upped my own fish oil intake to 10 grams. I didn't want to go for 40, but so I'm doing 10 grams of fish oil per day in the morning along with my smoothie. And that also has been studied and found to be associated with decreased risk of bone marrow lesions, helping with stiff or tender or swollen joints, decreasing the progression of osteoarthritis, decreasing the inflammatory aspects of cartilaginous cell metabolism. So there's a lot of benefits to omega-3 fatty acids as well. So ultimately, all that stuff, good traction, like doing traction regularly, doing deep tissue work regularly, and when you stretch, doing dynamic stretching, those would be some of the better ways to tackle this mobility issue. So
yeah, that's what I'd also want to see, and you can jump in here too, but I'd also want to see what Anthony's doing for the rest of his day. Like, sure, you can go off and do some dynamic stretching and stuff for like 30 minutes or 90 minutes if you're really into it. But what about the rest of the day? Like, how is he moving through the world or not moving through the world for the rest of the time? I think that's where something like Feldenkrais would come in, or the Alexander technique or something, to see what he's doing the rest of the time and how he's standing, how he's moving, how he's sitting.
Yeah, the Alexander technique is really interesting. I just finished a book about that, and it really is just awareness, just body awareness and spatial awareness. And I went over to our Facebook page because after reading that book, I recorded an audio, like a 3-minute audio version of the book, just with some of the basic cues that I learned from the book to remind me when I wake up in the morning, I can listen to that. And it's like, you know, pull your left shoulder away from your right hip. And pull your right shoulder away from your left hip. Yeah. Imagine your hands becoming wider and longer. Keep your knees slightly bent, tongue pressed against the roof of the mouth. And you do all these things, they start to become natural. So I'll link to that that Facebook post that I did, because what I did was I just recorded that audio and then embedded it in the Facebook post. Anybody could go download it for free. And I also put a link to the book, that Alexander Technique book that I use. So we'll link to all these resources in the show notes for you, Anthony, and enjoy.
Hey, Ben, this is Katie in beautiful East Tennessee. You've mentioned a few times on your show about vaping essential oils. I was wondering if you could give us a little more details on that. I have a lot of friends that live really healthy lifestyles, other than the fact that they can't give up their vapes. How does vaping essential oils compare to a regular vape in terms of the amount of smoke it produces, with the flavor, and how do you use it? How do you create your blends? What do you put in your blends? What vape do you use? If you could give us some more details on that, I'd really appreciate it.
Have you ever vaped essential oils, Brock?
No, the only thing I've ever vaped is a little more green and herby looking.
That's very, very essential. There's essential oils in marijuana. A lot of oils in marijuana.
I didn't say marijuana.
Terpenes and oils. Oh, broccoli. You vaping broccoli?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But only after chopping it up and leaving it for 90 minutes.
I had never thought about vaporizing via a vape pen or a bong or anything else. Essential oils. Like, that was never anything I even thought of. It makes sense that you would be able to deliver some of these compounds into your lungs. But I never thought of it until I was hanging out with Paul Cech. And Paul Cech, who I've interviewed a few times on the show, and he's an enormous wealth of knowledge on health. He'll take like organic tobacco or a really good loose leaf tea, like a chamomile or a lavender or a tea blend.
So he's basically a beatnik. You're describing a beatnik.
Yes.
That's exactly what they used to do in like the 50s and 60s.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, you mean like vaporized tea?
Well, not vaporize it, but smoke tea and like fancy tobaccos and stuff.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay. So he's a beatnik. So anyways, he'll also put essential oils on that, sometimes like a sativa or an indica. And he was kind of showing me, like, he has all these like recipes, right? Like, you can vaporize for like something uplifting, like a little bit of peppermint with a sativa and like a green tea, or you could vape like a lavender over an indica strain with a chamomile tea. And it's almost like eating foods. And I started doing this. I sit in my sauna sometimes in the evening while I'm reading, and I vaporize essential oils. Now, there are some essential oil vapes, like actual essential oil vapes. And these you got to be careful with, because they actually have a lot of glycerin in them. And, you look at the label, it says, glycerin, sometimes like natural flavors. You're essentially vaping some things that could be carcinogenic if you're just using one of these vape pens that comes loaded with essential oil. They also call them personal diffuser or diffuser sticks or aromatherapy vape pens. And they look like these little hard plastic cigarettes, and they're essential oils and glycerin and water. And then there's like a heating element inside. And when you inhale, basically you get this cloud of aromatherapy, and you inhale the vapor. And there are a lot of benefits of vaporizing essential oils, but these vape pens I'm not a fan of, because to heat vegetable glycerin, you actually have to get it pretty hot to actually make the, it's like over 500 degrees Fahrenheit, and that produces something called acrolein, and that's a respiratory irritant and a carcinogen. So if you're using these vape pens that have glycerin in them, that's bad news bears. And
so the glycerin is actually part of the fluid, like part of the liquid suspending the essential oil?
Yeah, and they make a lot of these flavors with something called propylene glycol, and that can turn into formaldehyde when you heat it. So you're essentially like inhaling formaldehyde. And these companies will put like ginseng and melatonin and essential oils and B12 into these sticks. But, God knows what else when it comes to what you're actually inhaling. And there are ways that you can do this yourself without having glycerol or propylene glycol in a vape pen. And that's what I do. So for example, you can look at specific essential oils, and they have specific effects when you vaporize them. And they even sell, vaporizers that you just add your own essential oils to. I have one called a Magic Flight Box that works pretty easily. You can just put your herb in there, and you may be able to get these on Amazon. These Magic Flight Boxes, it's like this beautiful little device. It's portable. I'm not sure if you can buy vaporizers like that on Amazon, but I'm pretty sure they've got most of the Magic Flight stuff on Amazon. And I'll put a link in the show notes if people want to get some Magic Flight stuff. But that's what I use, is a Magic Flight. And In addition to that, I did an interview recently with this guy who runs a company called Essential Oil Wizardry, and we talk about some different essential oil vaporizers as well. So that podcast should come out soon. But basically, for example, just to give you an idea of what kind of essential oils you can vape. You know, I mentioned like lavender is being relaxing, or peppermint is being uplifting. Rosemary is another really good one. And they vaporize at different temperatures. I also have this vaporizer called a Buddha, and the Buddha allows you to adjust the temperature kind of up and down really precisely. Not a lot of vaporizers do that. And so if I put an essential oil into the vaporizer and I'm not getting anything off of it, I can turn it up just slightly. Cause like, lemon or orange essential oil, which is great as an antidepressant or as an immune system assist, it would have a higher vaporizing point than say like clove or oregano, which would also be kind of cytoprotective for like your gastric mucosa. Like I will probably vape oregano tonight because of the, like this little chest throaty thing that I have going on, but that vaporizes at like 250 degrees and lemon is like 350 degrees. And there's a lot of different oils that you can vape that vape at different temperatures.
And so how do you know what temperature does it say on the package when you buy the essential oils, or do you need to look this up?
You got to look it up. I'll put a link to a pretty good article that has some of the temperatures that essential oils vape at. So, cool. But anyways, probably the most interesting one, is, frankincense, that has some really interesting, what are called sesquiterpenes in it. And, sesquiterpenes can act on the pineal gland. And you know how like, you know, like, your pineal gland produces DMT, for example, a lot of people do like ayahuasca or DMT as a psychedelic. Frankincense actually acts very similarly, and you can get it like a mild psychedelic effect when you vaporize frankincense. It's actually really good when you vaporize it with if you're into marijuana, you can vaporize it with marijuana. You can vaporize it with teas. I vaporized it with organic tobacco before, but vaporizing frankincense, that's probably one of the better ones that I have vaporized. And of course, you want to choose from a good company. Like I use either Young Living Essential Oils or Essential Oil Wizardry. Those are the two companies that I'll get my essential oils from. But yeah, frankincense is actually a really good one to vape. So yeah, you need to be careful. Just don't go buy a vaporizer off the street that already has oil added to it. I would encourage you to do your own mix with all the propylene glycol and everything. There's one called a Thrive CBD vape pen. And that is one of the few vape pens that you can buy that's already prepackaged, and that has some essential oils in it along with CBD. I have that one up by my nightstand. That one's really great for vaping at night because, again, it's got no propylene glycol, about 200 milligrams of CBD, and you get about like 1 milligram for each hit that you take on it, but extremely healthy. It's non-psychedelic, and that one has like a really, really great flavor, and it's just like totally organic hemp oil with no propylene glycol and no nicotine. It's super clean. So if you're going to like buy a done for you vaporizer, that's the one that I'd go with.
Cool. So the big question is, like, I've got a diffuser that I keep in a couple rooms of the house, and we diffuse essential oils. Diffuser. What would be the advantage of vaping it, or is there an advantage to vaping it, or like over using a diffuser?
So you can bend over diffuser. Like I've got one on my desk right now. Like right now I'm diffusing lime. Lime's actually a great little. I don't talk about that a lot, but it smells great. It makes me feel like I'm in freaking like Miami while it's 2 degrees outside. So I bend over. I just took a big whiff of it, and it smells really good. You can breathe it into your lungs, but it's not like quite as mainlined a delivery as going through a vape pen and heating it up a little bit. You don't get quite as big of a hit, I suppose. You know, you could almost correlate. I don't want to sound like a total pothead, but it's like, you know, secondhand smoke versus vaporizing marijuana, you know, that kind of thing. But ultimately, yeah, I mean, you could literally just like bend over an essential oil diffuser and get some of the effect if you just want to see, like put a bunch of frankincense oil in there if you have an oil diffuser and lean over it and breathe a bunch in for about a minute and stand up and go to La La Land for a little while. Actually, Brock, I just gave myself a great idea. I just while I bent over and smelled this lime, I put a few drops of peppermint in there. So now I've got lime mint diffusing, and I can breathe that in while we're podcasting.
It's a mojito diffuser.
Yeah, I just made up a mojito recipe for my diffuser. Oh my, mint is strong. Okay, let's move on.
Hey Ben, what do you think about aged garlic extract? Seems they recommend this supplement for just about everything, and I was wondering what you thought about daily use and in general. Thanks again.
Garlic extract, hey?
I took garlic. I read this book called The Healthy Writer, and I interviewed this physician who wrote The Healthy Writer, and it's about how to be a shocker here, healthy writer. But they actually, there's a section in the book on diet, and they go into how like they had horrible bloating and gas and would like be on the couch exhausted at the end of the day just from gut pain, and all they did was eliminate garlic and onions, right? Two of the biggest fermentable vegetables that exist from their diet, and like overnight everything stopped. So
yeah, but what's the point of living at that point? I mean, come on.
I know. I love like a big old roasted elephant garlic with some olive oil and sea salt. So good. But I read that, and so I took garlic and onions out of my diet, and actually I don't fart as much. So there's something to be said.
Again, what's the point of living? One of the greatest choices in life.
I can go without garlic, and I can use some garlic, like spice and stuff like that. And I don't miss onions that much. I'm not like,
but you miss farting.
Onion ring guy. No, I definitely don't miss farting. Anyways, though, so I wrote a.
I don't know you anymore. Who are you?
I wrote an article recently. What have I become?
What have you become?
Old triathlete farting machine who used to race with you in Thailand and give you rocket fuel behind me on the bike, and now I just don't fart. No, fartless.
You're just no fun.
Yeah.
You changed, man.
Anyways, though, so I wrote this article on how to drop a nuclear bomb, how to unleash a nuclear bomb on the cold and the flu. And I actually get into high-dose garlic in that, like 9,000 milligrams of what's called high allicin garlic. I'm a huge fan of this one called Alamax for that, as one of the more highly absorbable forms of garlic that exists. And I mean, if you have been exposed to the flu or you have a cold and you want to get rid of it fast, it's a really good way to go. But that's not aged garlic. Aged garlic is different. You can actually combine it with aged garlic because aged garlic works differently than like a high allicin garlic. And it's got a lot of research behind it, actually, this aged garlic. High allicin garlic, that's got allicin, and allicin turns into a whole bunch of different fat and water soluble compounds in your body that are all sulfur based. They tap into what's called your hydrogen sulfide signaling system, and that relaxes your blood vessels, which is why it's so great for your blood pressure. If you have high blood pressure, to be using on a regular basis, like a high allicin based or a high allicin based garlic extract. But it's also associated, and this is in a host of studies, with a significantly reduced risk of prostate cancer, colon cancer, stomach cancer. It induces a higher amount of fatty acid burning. It induces secretion of adrenaline. So it's actually like a good supplement to take before you do like a cold bath or a cold soak if you're trying to maximize fat loss. It reduces triglyceride levels if you're trying to improve your triglyceride to HDL ratio. And that would be like a high allicin based garlic.
But I have to say it. Yeah. Hi, Allison.
Hi. Hey, Allison. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, Allison.
Hey.
Yeah. You're funny. You're funny, Brock.
You said it so many times.
Aged garlic, though, has some really compelling studies on it in terms of everything that it can do. It's pretty crazy. So this would include, when it comes to aged garlic, better dopamine transmission, better GABA transmission, and better balance of neurotransmitters, improve memory and learning, and improve neurogenesis, decrease risk of Alzheimer's disease, higher red blood cell count. I mentioned better blood pressure, lower triglycerides, more normalized cholesterol, lower blood glucose, and an increase in insulin sensitivity. Better conversion of white adipose tissue into brown fat. Like I mentioned, that's one of the reasons it's good to take prior to like a cold thermogenesis if you're using that for weight loss. Improvement in aerobic exercise capacity, decrease in bone loss. Of course, we all know about garlic's, impact on viruses, but increase in neutrophils, increase in macrophages, increase in killer T cells, decrease sickness frequency. There's even some really interesting interactions with hormones where you see like a downregulation of cortisol, stabilization of thyroid hormones, decrease in DNA damage. It has interactions, like I mentioned earlier, with cancer metabolism. I mean, it's crazy. It keeps vampires away. So there's that.
Yeah.
So anyways, aged garlic extract. It's high specifically in something called allylcysteine. Basically that's the active component that's different than what you get from normal garlic. And, you know, what I talk about in that article I wrote on how to knock a cold or flu out of your body is taking about 3,000 to 4,000 milligrams of an aged garlic extract per day. That's how you would get a lot of these immune boosting effects if you're looking at it for that. There's not a lot of brands out there. There's one brand that I like called Kyolic. It's Kyolic. You can get that one on Amazon. You can also make aged garlic yourself. When you age garlic, it becomes what's called a tonic herb. That means it can be taken safely for a long period of time, almost like an adaptogenic herb. And aging also removes the garlic smell and the garlic odor, which is a plus, I suppose, unless you're into that whole smelling like a pizza thing, unless you're like me, oregano and garlic all day long. Anyways, though, so aged garlic, the way that you would make it is you would just get garlic, like your cloves of garlic, and you don't cut them and
forget about it for 6 months.
Yeah, you don't want to cut them or crush them because then that begins to release the allicin, and that causes it to lose a lot of its medicinal and its health properties. So you want the whole cloves, and you just peel the cloves. You take the whole cloves and you put them in a mason jar, and you pour a bunch of apple cider vinegar on top of it. You also put, speak of the devil, about a spoonful of oregano extract on top of there. You could use, ideally an oregano oil. You could also use just like a chopped oregano herb. And then you put a lid on the mason jar with the apple cider vinegar and the garlic cloves and the oregano, and you shake that up, and it's going to gas up a little bit. So every day you want to kind of, after you put a lid on and you put it away, you want to burp the lid, meaning you open it up and you let some of the gas out. And then after about 3 or 4 days, the garlic will start to turn green, and that's totally normal. And then after about 3 weeks, it is, ready, minimum of 3 weeks. And the longer that you age it, kind of the more mild the taste begins to come, but it's essentially like a ferment, and it's fantastic for you. And again, if you don't want to make all that, you can get this Kyolic garlic from, that's Kyolic from Amazon. But you can also that's like so simple to make aged garlic. You can just keep a jar of that around. And if you're ever sick, or if you just want to use it as a daily tonic, it's amazing. Again, it's like a blood cleanser, and it lowers inflammation, good source of antioxidants. The only person who would want to be careful with this would be someone who, like I mentioned, is sensitive to high FODMAP intake. So if you're on a high FODMAP diet, you wouldn't want to do this. But yeah, that's what you need to know about garlic, baby.
Hi, Ben and Brock. Appreciate you guys on the great work that you're doing. So how can you get rid of sunspots or age spots? So far, I've tried apple cider vinegar and lemon. So any advice would be great.
This is our second Anthony of the day.
I know. There's a lot of Anthonys out there.
Yeah.
Garlic. Anthony asked about the mobility issue.
Yeah.
It's a different Anthony, though. Unless
different Anthony.
Masked and changed his voice using one of those crazy phone devices that the cops use when they want to bust out open a case. We should do this whole response in a different voice.
Well, this, you know that I masked voices.
What is that voice?
How to get rid of sunspots or age spots?
I'm like a dying Sean Connery. That's what I sound like.
Huh?
Dying
Sean Connery.
You nailed it.
Yeah. How to get rid of sunspots or age spots? You use apple cider vinegar and lemon juice. No, Anthony, the apple cider vinegar goes in the garlic, remember? So, age spots, sunspot. Well, when your skin gets exposed to the sun, you produce a bunch of melanocytes that increase the melanin in your skin, and that turns the skin darker, and you can get these age spots. And they're not cancer in most cases. They're benign, but they can be aesthetically unpleasing or annoying. And by the way, if you put sunglasses on, did you know that you actually, like, one of the signals to produce melanin in the skin and to get a tanning effect and to not burn is the stimulation of light hitting the retina in your eyes? So if you wear sunglasses in the sun, you'll burn more easily. Isn't that crazy? But theoretically, you would make fewer sunspots. So I would just say put on some sunglasses and you'll be good to go. Kiss those age spots goodbye. Thank Ray-Ban. Lemon juice actually can work. It's a natural bleaching agent, and it exfoliates the skin, and it can work. So that'd be one option. It's the citric acid in it. So you could use anything with a high amount of citric acid in it. Apple cider vinegar also works. It's got what are called alpha hydroxy acids in it. And those lighten sunspots and lighten age spots. The problem is it kind of stings. Like, I don't know if you ever put apple cider vinegar on your skin.
Wait, stings,
but it's not
or stinks?
Stings. It's not a pleasant sensation. But speaking of stinking, onions have sulfur compounds in them that act as an antiseptic and have acids that facilitate exfoliation. And you can literally chop up an onion, like put it in half and just like hold it against the sunspot. That would be another option. Very sexy option. Driving down the highway with half of an onion held up to your face.
It's taped onto
you. You leave it on there for like 15 or 20 minutes. That's a good idea, Brock. You could probably sell that. Somebody just sent me like a testosterone increasing device. It's called like I think it's called a jet pack. It's like an ice pack for your balls, but it literally is just an ice pack that says, put this on your balls. Right. Huh? So you could probably sell an onion with duct tape attached to it and call it like the sunspot miracle and people would buy it. You could call it a biohack. Biohacking the sunspot biohacker. Horseradish also has vitamin C in it, and that can slow the production of melanin in the same way that lemons can. So if you don't have any lemons laying around, but you're at the prime rib last night and have some extra horseradish, horseradish can help. It's got glucosinolates in it too, and those increase circulation and can also have an effect on sunspots. That'd be another
this
idea.
This podcast is making me hungry.
I know. A lot of these things you can hold against your face. Papaya is another one. You can actually exfoliate the skin, and it's also got alpha hydroxy acids in it, so you can use papaya. You can make yourself a meal and just put the whole meal on your face and get rid of your sunspots.
Go to the keg and
buttermilk also. Buttermilk and yogurt. My wife puts yogurt on her face sometimes, and apparently it works. And that's because of the lactic acid in the yogurt. The lactic acid also has like an acidic effect. Castor oil, which is great if you rub it onto your stomach for like stomach issues and gut issues, but you can also rub it onto sunspots along with aloe vera. Same thing. And then if you want to go the essential oil route, the essential oil you'd use is sandalwood. Sandalwood can reduce the appearance of age spots. So a lot of ways to go, but I actually, I use the skin serum. I use the skin serum every single day because it's got aloe vera in it. It's got oregano in it. It's got a concentrated extract from all the compounds that I just talked about. Palmarosa, organic lemon. So it's like really concentrated vitamin C, juniper berry, geranium. What else is in there? Lavender. It's got lavender in it. It's got triphala, which is those are three different Ayurvedic herbs. And so it's really rejuvenating. It balances what are called your doshas. So it has a little bit of an Ayurvedic twist to it. The amla in it, that's one of the richest and highest natural sources of vitamin C you'll find. It's also called Indian gooseberry. Aloe vera, like I mentioned, is amazing for getting rid of scars and redness and irritation and itchiness. And that's got some really good skin nourishing properties. Anyways, there's 12 different essential oils, and it took me like a year and a half to make this product. It's called Keon skin serum. And I mean, I eat my own dog food, everything. Like I take Flex every day, and I take, I take the Keon oregano and the aminos. Like I use all, like the Keon products are now pretty much my playground. That's what I use every day. So that skin serum though, I just keep it, one in my bathroom counter. And smear that on my face, and it works like gangbusters. I do that in a clay mask once a week, and not to sound narcissistic, but my skin looks great. I don't have any of those damn age spots, so that's where I would start.
I bought some of that serum for my mom and my sister for Christmas, but I've actually never used it. Is it like an oily thing? Is it a lotiony thing?
No, it's hard to describe. It's like a little bit oily, but not like coconut oil oily or olive oil oily. Some people use a moisturizer in addition to it. Like sometimes I'll put that on my face and then go downstairs and I'll put a little olive oil to follow it up, right? Just to add a little bit of a moisturizer coloring effect. But
so it's more watery.
Yeah, a little bit, but it has enough oil in it to moisturize as well if you wanted to, you know, between the aloe vera and some of those other oils. So it's pretty versatile. And I'll link to that in the show notes too. I realize I'm biased, but I would skip the grocery store aisle and just go straight to the big guns and use that stuff. But if you want to smear buttermilk and yogurt and papaya, lemon, apple cider vinegar on your face, be my guest.
Or just tape an onion to your face.
One tasty head.
Patent pending.
All right. So this is the part of the show where we decide
where we have a really awkward silence.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is the part of the show where we shut up and we let somebody else do the talking. Somebody who left a review. Did you see this review on iTunes?
I didn't see it on iTunes, okay. But I'm staring at it right now.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the person's name.
Well, first of all, guessing. This is the part of the show where if you hear your review of this show read on iTunes, we will send you a sweet swag pack. That would include like a BPA-free water bottle and a slick tech t-shirt and also a beanie, a toque. This gentleman or lady, not quite sure, is named J J J J J J J J J J J J H J H H, and the title of this is called Fat Fueled at 50. They apparently had an epileptic seizure on the keyboard, but they did leave five stars. They did use a copious number of exclamation marks.
Five stars and 15 exclamations.
Very excited. They're very excited. They probably did like LSD and coffee, a nootropic, and Adderall before writing this review. But you want to take this one away?
Even their ellipses has five periods instead of three.
That's impressive.
They're just really, really excited.
Take this one away, Brock.
Okay, I'm going to try and be as excited as JJJJJJHJJHH. Just discovered this amazing podcast. I'm binge listening and learning so much. I started keto 8 months ago. 52 is the new 32. No joke. This podcast is my new favorite. I'm learning so much. I'm now strength training. Thanks, Ben.
You sound like the hyperactive kid on South Park. What's the kid on South Park?
Oh, Twitch. You know,
yeah, Twitch.
I'm now strength training.
Greatest podcast ever.
I love this podcast. Rocket.
Thanks, man.
Hey, guys. Goodbye.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.